So I started out at this synagogue, actually, also in special projects. Not like this one. This, as I said at the beginning, those of you who are here, this is our farewell tour. We'll be doing this in several cities before we finish with Friday Night Live. Next week, Oakland. I used to do High Holiday services here on the fourth floor in the gymnasium. A few of you were there back then. I wouldn't be proud of it, but yeah. And I was just thinking about that today when I came here. I remember my most horrifying moment was there used to be a hotel called the Del Capri. Some of you may remember. That's where I used to stay, at the Del Capri. And one time when I went, I stayed there, and I mean, I didn't live anywhere nearby, and I didn't have a car, and I was a student from the East Coast at the time, and I realized that I had brought everything, and it was right before Yom Kippur, except for socks. And I thought, how do you appear as the rabbi on Yom Kippur with no socks? And I'm offering you this because I should leave you with some practical wisdom. I asked them if there was anything in the lost and found in the laundry. And so I did one of my first Yom Kippurs here in borrowed socks, which always seemed to me something of a metaphor, but I don't know exactly for what. Over the years, we've had some remarkable people here. We've had people that most of you probably don't remember being at Friday Night Live because it was in the early years when Ryan Seacrest came by and spoke to us. We've had Harold Kushner and Elie Wiesel and Rick Warren and David Gregory and Kirk Douglas and lots of wonderful people. But I want to tell you a story about Wiesel because it too is important and should be known. When Elie Wiesel came to Friday Night Live, and remember that he grew up and practices as an Orthodox Jew. First of all, I remember the look on his face when the instrumentation started. He was surprised. And then he leaned over to me and said something that shocked me and concerned me. He said, "You know, I've never spoken in a microphone on Shabbat in my life." Yeah, that's what I said too. I thought, here he is, the most revered living Jew, telling me that I'm forcing him to break his ritual practice. So I said, because I thought, he's part of an interpretive tradition and he'll figure it out. I should have asked him about the socks, but he got up and he spoke into the microphone. And then I walked him home, back to his hotel, and I said to him, "If it's not too much to ask, can you tell me why did you do that?" And he said, "Because not to speak into the microphone would embarrass the Jews who were in front of me. Speaking into the microphone is between me and God." Never forgot that. I thought many times about what I was going to say tonight, but I never got very far, to tell you the truth. Because I figured I would start, first of all, by recalling a couple of people who made it possible, whom you may not know. Some of you do, but many of you don't. When we first started out, I remember I went to two couples, Ruth and Sid Pilot, and Rose and Alex Farkas. Rose and Ruth are still with us. Alex and Sid, alas, are not. But they both funded the startup, so to speak. And then Hetty and Ted Orton, because this is the Orton Friday Night Live, ensured that it would last in perpetuity. So to those people who believed in it and who funded it and who made it possible, I think it's really important that together as a kahal, we say thank you. And then before I get to two quick stories with which I want to end, I want to say something about Craig. As you have discovered, we kid each other a great deal, and you might think that that means that there's friction in our relationship. But in fact, there is friction in our relationship. But I'll tell you the kind of friction it is. Craig always talks about the fact that the reason this has worked over all these years is because we trust each other. And on one level, that's completely true. We trust each other. We know that the other one will pick up, will help, will so on. But we also have what I have come to think of as a creative mistrust. And I'll tell you what that means. It's okay, because he's not listening back there. Craig and I look at the world in different ways. And we try to convince each other of the other one's vision. So he'll say, let's try this. And I'll say, no, that's a terrible idea. And he'll say, just think about it. And I'll think about it. And I'll write back and say, I've thought about it. It's a terrible idea. And he'll give me 20 reasons why. And I'll say, all right, we'll try it once. And then, as often as not, it works brilliantly. That kind of creative mistrust has been fantastic. Because we've learned from each other and grown with each other and opened each other's eyes and souls to different ways of looking at the world. And if all we did was trust each other, it wouldn't be nearly as good. And I say this to you because everybody in their life has all sorts of partnerships and everybody always talks about trust, but I want you to know that this sort of friction, this sort of, I don't really trust your judgment in this, and I think you're wrong, but I trust you as a whole, so I'll give you a little leeway, it's a really good thing. And Friday Night Live is largely a result of that. Remember, at first, those of you who know the story, Craig wanted to make this a children's service because he was working with Disney at the time. And I said, it can't be, it's got to be adult. And he was willing, through his mistrust, to trust me. And then he said, I want to write all new music. And I said, no, you don't want to write all new music. We have music, we're Jews, we've got music. And he said, no, we don't have the right music. And then he wrote the soundtrack to my life over the past 17 years and to many of yours and to many synagogues and Jews throughout the world. So here are the two stories that I want to tell you. One about why this will be mine and Craig's last Friday Night Live, even though, just let me be clear, all these people ask me, oh, I didn't know you were retiring. I'm not retiring. I'm still at Sinai Temple all the time, except for during Friday Night Live. And it's because of something that I told the Atid class last night. I just taught it last night, and as I was teaching it, I thought, this is what I want to say tomorrow night. So thank you, those of you who came, and here it is again. You know the story of Jacob and Esau, that when Esau has the birthright stolen, he wants to kill his brother, but he says, I'm not going to kill you until our father dies, and Jacob runs away, and 20 years later, Esau, who is Jacob's fraternal twin, right? They look different. We know Esau is hairy and Jacob is smooth, but they're twins. 20 years later, he comes to Jacob with 400 men. And the assumption is he's going to kill him. But in fact, what happens is after Jacob bows down to him and offers him gifts and so on, Esau sweeps aside the gifts and falls on Jacob's neck and begins to weep. And all the rabbis have many explanations for why it is that in the end, instead of killing him, Esau weeps with him. But the most beautiful explanation, and I'm not saying this for reasons of nepotism, but it's true, is the one that originated actually with my late father, who was a rabbi in Philadelphia. His explanation was, in the ancient world, people almost never saw themselves. There were very few mirrors in the ancient world. It was very expensive to have polished glass, and most people went years without seeing themselves unless they happened to see themselves in a pond, which is, as you know, if you look in water, a very poor reflection. And so, unlike us, we're very familiar with our own faces. For most of human history, most human beings didn't really know day to day what they looked like, which was probably a blessing. So Esau comes and he sees Jacob. And remember that even though Jacob was not identical, he was his twin. The exact same age, just for a few minutes lapse. And he looks and he sees how old Jacob has become. And he knows how old he has become. And he thinks of all the wasted years of hatred. And he falls on his brother's neck and he weeps. One of the things that you realize as you see people at sometimes very irregular intervals as their lives grow, the way that Dale spoke about where his children were when Friday Night Live started and where they are now, is it's been a long time. It's been a long time, and I see it in different ways in the faces of people who were little children when we started this and now are in college or graduated college. I see it in the people who started this out with me and are now in a very different place in their lives from where they were at the beginning. And I realize that it's really important to give other people that chance, because it's not a sad thing. It's a beautiful thing, a wonderful thing, a precious thing, because unlike Esau and Jacob, I look back not on years of emptiness and hatred, but on years of prayer and learning and community and closeness. And so I realized that for me, this actually isn't a sad moment at all. Because it's not about what I'm leaving, it's about everything that I had and have. And all the things that this service brought into my life. The second story I want to tell is also a story that in a way concerns my father, but also seems to me to be particularly poignant at this moment. When the State of Israel was founded in 1948, nobody knew what the UN vote was going to be. They hoped, but they didn't know. And people were counting the votes over and over and over and over again, and they didn't know if it would be successful or not. As we now know, polls are not very reliable. Just ask the cantor. And not the one here. And my father and all of his rabbinical school friends were waiting outside Madison Square Garden where there was going to be the big rally for the declaration of the State of Israel, and they stayed there overnight to get good seats. These days it would be a concert. Then it was actually the founding of the State of Israel. So a little bit of decline in the value of generations, but they were there towards the front of the line with a very old man, and they were all worried about him because there were thousands of people, and they knew when the doors were open, everybody was going to rush the stage. So the door opened, and my father said they all ran in, he and all of his friends. They ran into the front, and they sat down, and they looked behind them, and there was the old man. And he couldn't believe it. And he said to him, "How'd you get here? We were so worried about you." He said, "I never forgot what he told me. He said, I got here because I wasn't running alone." He was a survivor. And everybody that had gone before him who wasn't there anymore was running with him. One of the things that you feel if you do anything for any length of time in the Jewish tradition is you're not running alone. There are so many, living and gone, who are running with you, praying with you, offering the same kind of soul hope to you that you hope to be a vehicle to offer to others. I have felt that over and over and over again. It's the essence of uplift, is to know that it isn't you alone. It's the community, both horizontal and vertical. That is, the ones who came before and the ones who sit here. All of you, together. And then, lastly, there is faith. To me, the most poignant line in some ways in all of the prayers is unfortunately buried at the very end, so people don't always hear it. Craig has written a tune for it that I don't know about you, but I sing to myself all the time. The song itself is Biyado Afkid Ruchi, Bi'et Isham Bi'ayira, Bi'im Ruchi Gevi'ati Adonai Li V'lo Yira. It's the end of the Adonai. What it means in English is, in his hand, I commend my spirit when I sleep and when I wake. And should my soul pass away, God is with me and I will not fear. It is that certainty that what we do is larger than ourselves, greater than ourselves, that it comes from before us and goes on after us, that animates everything that moves our tradition forward. And to the extent that you have felt a little bit of that yad, of that hand, over these past 16 to 17 years, to that extent, we have sung the right song, prayed the right prayers, and said the right words. And God willing, those who are coming after us will do the same.